Thanks, everybody, for coming. We're going to start with introductions. I'm Andrea Firsthand. I'm with the Greater Twin Cities United Way, and I'm co-chair of this subgroup.
And Trish Olson with the University of Minnesota, and also co-chair.
I'm Jennifer Cherry, University of Minnesota, and co-chair of Business Educators.
I'm Bill Saravella, and I'm the Community Reinvestment Officer for TCFA.
I'm Jane Stockman, and I'm with the Minnesota Council on Economic Education.
I'm David Wiese, and I'm not a co-chair, and I'm with Wells Fargo.
I'm Monica Weber. I'm here representing the Minnesota Credit Union Network.
I'm Gina Blaney with Junior Achievement.
Jim Eisenreich, the president of the Minnesota Jumpstart Coalition, and business teacher at Eden Prairie High School, especially personal finance, which is more than half of my schedule every year.
I'm Dick Todd. I'm with the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis.
I'm Karen Thompson. I'm with Junior Achievement.
I'm Amy Bredigan. I work here at the legislature.
A couple points of business, and then we'll continue with the introductions. One, just so everyone knows, this is being recorded.
Oops. Remove my joke.
And then, two, there is a sign-in sheet going around, so make sure you get your name down. And if you're not getting these emails and you just heard about this from somebody else, just make sure you put your email. Otherwise, we've got it. No worries. So let's continue.
Hi, I'm Mary Jo Patras from the Minnesota Financial Business Network.
We're just doing introductions.
Please don't hesitate.
It's really nice and comfortable in here.
So if you want to just go around, if you want to introduce yourself, Kevin.
Kevin Murphy from the Department of Commerce. I'm one of the members of the task force.
I'm not sure who you are.
I'm Meredith Payne. I'm an intern at Lutheran Social Service.
I'm Ron Szymanski, State Representative, District 18A.
Great, thank you. So we're going to start with, first I just wanted to mention a couple things. One of our tasks of this group is to begin to compile research. And we're fortunate in that, for those of you who are at the last task force meeting, Dr. Solheim at the University of Minnesota did a great presentation kind of summarizing some of the research and presenting it that exists in this field, both around adults and around youth. And so we do have a spreadsheet that we're supposed to be completing, and I'm giving you the sample page, just the categories for, we're going to divide it by financial education and youth and then financial education and adults. There's an intern at United Way who is going to help compile that information and populate the spreadsheet. But the reason I wanted you to each have it is so that you could begin thinking about what research you're already aware of, have in your own records that you could be passing on and sharing so that we really have kind of a comprehensive inventory of what's out there. And if you have, like, a summary that you can provide, that's even better, though not required.
Andrew, where should they send it? Did you say that?
You can go ahead and send it to me, and then I'll pass it on to you. And then we're also putting all that information up on the website for the task force as well as on unitedfrontmn.org.
And so you could reply to Andrea's email if you received her invitation and not give her email after the meeting, so you have her email to submit your summary results.
Andrea, so you're looking like just for like academic articles, other things? You just want to build a library of this or what?
Yeah. So it would be academic articles. It might be research done around, you know, those of you with Junior Achievement were wonderful enough to kind of share some of the research that's been done both nationally and locally on results and impact, you know, so it could be of either nature there. Are there other things you're thinking of?
Well, I'm just trying to think how to get it done efficiently if like, you know. Anyway, there's some of these sorts of things out there. It's mm-hmm. tricky because, I mean, there's, in some sense, you know, many of them. So.
Yes, there are.
Yeah. Well, and the beauty of having an intern look at it, too, is pulling out any duplication and things of that nature.
Well, even typing them all in here is a lot of work, so I've got to think about how to do it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and we can always talk for
Well, never mind. That's enough. Thanks.
Okay.
I guess my suggestion would be if there are multiple resources, do we want to just suggest the very best of them?
That gets hard to. Well, I'll think about it. Anyway, I just want to clarify what you're looking for. Thanks.
Oh, and I should know, maybe this will help, is that we're looking, with even within the adult and the youth category, but particularly within the adult, we will organize based on last task force meeting on models, on kind of key transition points, so research that really speaks to some of those different breakouts. So that's one way of thinking about it as well. So just to remind people or those who weren't there, some of the models were like the Annie Casey Center for Working Families, and the integration of financial education into human services, and then, you know, obviously K-12 has its own plethora of approaches and strategies. Things like key financial education when tied with assets, and financial education when it is built around key transition or decision-making points for a few of the breakouts. So let's give maybe whatever updates people have. Part of what we talked about at the last meeting was the social studies standards. Beth Ahn from the Department of Education came in and presented, and we had some good discussion around what that process is going to look like. And I believe time's kind of flying, but I'm thinking it's starting in the next, you know, one to two months, although there's others here who probably can pin that down a little bit more closely. And there's been, you know, some of us have had discussions kind of in the interim and updates as to what's been done. So I just want to open it up, and anyone who can speak to kind of what they've been working on or what they're aware of in relation to that process. We do know that the committee is being will be formed and that nominations are being taken, and so to serve on that committee. And then, of course, we had the opportunity to also be sharing information directly with Beth that might inform that process, whether it's on other national other standards in other states, research around kind of K-12 and the impact of financial education. Is there anything I'm missing?
No, I don't think so. But we really did want to hear that, when this committee started, it just seemed to be kind of things collided, that the social studies standards were happening at the same time as this group was meeting, and many people felt that we couldn't go in isolation and just talk about letters out of poverty without acknowledging that there might be a way to influence the youth and how they, as they mature, have an opportunity to educate, influence, and that the social studies standards might be a way to do that. So I guess we're looking to those who are involved with that, and they might want to share what they know might be happening, or any updates. Are they taking names yet for the? Anyone see that the website's taking names yet?
Well, we have had discussions with a few different individuals who are looking to ensure that there is kind of key members who have both the teaching as well as the personal finance background on that committee and are willing to make that kind of time. And there are a few individuals who are looking to put their name forward. So, to me, that's a key piece of this, is ensuring that that voice is a part of that discussion. So we were fortunate enough to have some people step up. So we'll see if they get accepted and how that all plays out, but that's one positive piece. And then I do know that there were individuals who were sharing information about kind of what this looks like in other states and some of the research around that. So I encourage others to do that if they have the time, if you know that information and some of that work is being done kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, I did get an update from our colleagues in Colorado because mm-hmm. they've had some recent activity. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody knows this, but they've recently gotten legislature passed to mandate financial literacy K-12 throughout the state of Colorado. But it's unfunded, mm-hmm. mandate. And so it's up to the school districts themselves to determine how they're going to address that. They also got approved high stakes testing for financial literacy in the math strand. Mm-hmm. So that's how they're going to hold them accountable to teaching those lessons. And then they also just recently got past testing of social studies standards. So they feel like they've, similar group has had some, a real positive effect on some of those decisions.
So did you say they're actually going to test within the social studies standards personal finance pieces?
No, personal finance will be tested within math.
Within
testing.
Math, okay. Okay. That does seem to be the movement around kind of some requirements that some states are heading towards, mm-hmm. and it's certainly just a handful of them right now, but mm-hmm. it's sort of an evolving mm-hmm. trend. So
we do see a lot of our schools implementing our personal finance classes within mathematics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, and then in social studies, it seems to happen in the context of the economy. So,
Andrea, do you know anything about the background of some of the people that have expressed interest in being on the
teachers who have a personal finance background? So that's.
You mean to be on to putting their name forward for social studies committee, you mean? I've heard both at the teacher level, but also at agency level, agencies who are interested in personal finance.
But in terms of, names that are being put forward, who are going to nominate themselves.
Yeah,
with the two or three I have heard about, I believe both had teaching backgrounds as well as personal finance backgrounds.
Where should that be communication be coming from? Department of Ed?
Yeah, so Beth Ahn is really heading that,
okay.
and she was very open at our last meeting to hearing from people.
Yeah.
Is it offensive? I mean, when you say coming from or where you should be looking,
yeah.
I think is...
Okay.
I think it's different, and so I would think you would be watching the Department of Education website.
Okay.
I don't know that they have any mandate to promote it. I mean, I would assume they would, but I mean, I also think there's a responsibility for those who are interested to look to.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't Jumpstart monitoring that, Jim? Too.
Well,
I am Jim for Jumpstart, and so I do it once a month.
Right. The concern. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
I was on the last meeting. The one concern that I have is that
when it opens, it might only be a couple of weeks.
You know, if it's social studies, if they're going to look within,
I'm not positive.
Social studies teachers have not been teaching this subject,
right.
And
that's not true.
Well,
some do.
But they're not licensed to teach that subject.
Oh, I don't know if they're licensed. They do teach
right.
it.
They can teach. They can teach some of the concepts within the framework of the curriculum. Mm-hmm. But the real experts are the people that are teaching courses, business educators, and family and consumer educators. And we've been doing it for years. So I would hope they would look to us because we're the ones that have been doing it over and over at the high school level in particular. So I don't know how this process works, but when they're looking for people, if they're looking within, they're finding people that are licensed for social studies, may have an interest here and there of implementing something into the curriculum, but there really isn't room in there. The way they did the standards last time, it was a very kind of piecemeal. There was very little in there regarding personal finance. So I'm concerned that, if they did it the way they did it last time, I'm concerned that, what are they going to do this time when they didn't get it done last time? Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm not offending anybody out of the social studies.
But I would say that you and I have a different perspective in that I think the business teachers and the consumer family and consumer science teachers are indeed very well trained to do it and do a great job. I think there are many social studies teachers who do a great job on it, too. There are undoubtedly some who don't. But, I mean, I don't think it's 100% accurate to say that no social studies teacher does a good job on that. I think there are some who do.
Well, sorry, Kathy, go ahead.
Just a question about, I came in a little late, but...
Kathy, you might, it's being recorded, so maybe just come up a little bit, if that's okay. And those of you who are
in the...
yeah, you may want to grab
come on up, because we want to get on the microphone. Thanks. This is Dr. Catherine Solon from the University of Minnesota, who did present at the last meeting.
Well, my question was about how the decision was made to move the finance to the math standards, and why if the technical pieces of it, calculating yeah. interest, et cetera, makes sense there.
Yeah.
But the nuances of making good decisions about your finances, living within your means, it's more of a values
yeah.
Decision-making process, and it's really not a math.
Yeah.
In terms of Colorado's decision, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could go back and just reconfirm how I understand it. But I think they were very concerned about the accountability of teaching personal financial concepts, and there was no high-stakes testing for social studies.
Okay, so it's just
math,
a practicality.
Yeah, math was tested, mm-hmm. and they said if we really believe that accountability is critical, then we need to embed that within mathematics. Mm-hmm. That being said, we have many math teachers who come to us, especially at the middle grade level, eighth grade, that say we can't teach percentages. It's a very difficult concept for many kids to understand. And so in the calculation of some of our curriculum, it doesn't go to your values-based. I get that that's a whole other component of personal financial literacy, but it does require them to practice time after time after time the application of percentages. So that particular concept is very strongly embedded within personal finance. And there's probably other examples, too. So that's the relevancy of mathematics. It doesn't go to the behavior or the psychology of personal finance. Yeah.
It's probably where the rubber meets the
yeah.
road.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this is a good discussion and it sort of has naturally transitioned to bullet four on the agenda for those who are trying to follow. And so,
very good.
I want to note that I think we want to put a placeholder that for those who really want to kind of stay tuned into social studies standards and maybe even look at nominating themselves or somebody they know to really be your own advocate for that, I think Tricia's point that, you know, and that if you have information that you really feel should be part of that that process to work with Beth on, I think she made that perfectly clear. Now, I think that's one track that's kind of like that train is, you know, about to leave the station if it hasn't already left in some respects. But I think we also want to open up this discussion to what are the other strategies for supporting kind of K through 12, and how do we ensure that there is that capacity, that training for teachers to, if the social studies standards do indeed go in a different direction this time and do get stronger around personal finance, then how can we ensure that within the context of social studies, that the teachers have the training they need to then be implementing that and meeting those new, what do we call them? In social studies, sorry. Whatever. The what?
Benchmarks?
Yes, thank you. Benchmarks, core competencies, you know, whatever. Yeah. Sorry.
I have two questions, if I might. One very narrow to what you just said, and one very broad, I'm afraid. Let me just tee up the broad one and then go back to the narrow one. Broadly, I kind of came into this process a meeting or two ago, and it would help me if we could just have like a real quick recapitulation of what the fundamental objective of this group is,
mm-hmm.
For the broader task force. Maybe no one else needs that, but I could use it.
I do.
Quick refresher. Mm-hmm. And then with regard to your recent statement that we're trying to assure the proper training of the social science teachers, is it not maybe we're trying to ensure the proper training of all teachers who might be involved, not just social studies teachers? I mean, I realize that the business teachers get it in their college training pretty much, but aren't we nonetheless supporting all teachers who might be involved, or are we focused on social science teachers?
Well, I think that's a good discussion. The only reason I put social studies out there as far as a beginning point is because of the standards. And so how do we ensure that capacity is there to meet that change that's down the pike? But I think you bring up a good point that, you know, in terms of long-term strategies, should we also be looking at, you know, going broader than that? And maybe a whole host of other strategies. So, but maybe going back to the original question around the group, and I don't know if Amy or Kevin or Representative Schmansky, you want to speak to any of that, and then also on the work plan that we'll be helping to flesh out, I did draft a purpose statement, and that might help as well. But you want to speak at all about kind of how this ties back to the original task force and the vision around that.
And what you want from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I can just say briefly, so backing all the way up, the task force is a growth from the Commission to End Poverty's final report and had this series of recommendations around asset development, financial literacy, et cetera. And one of the tricks of getting the task force passed and operational was being very lean and resourceful. So in our first meetings of the task force, and there are four members appointed from the House, four from the Senate, two Republican, two Democrat from each body. Then we have a liaison from the Department of Commerce and a liaison from the Attorney General's office, just in terms of setup. But how we got to these various work groups were what's an efficient way to tackle this, a large amount of work where we can have experts in the field really giving the task force advice and direction in terms of how to solve the issues before the task force. So we divided into three working groups, financial literacy and education, that's this group, and then this group is addressing two areas, adult and youth. Then we have an asset development and asset building group. They also call themselves wealth enhancement, I think, is another name. And then we have a group that focuses on community supports and community initiatives. So those are the three working groups, and the charge of each working group is, again, within their area of expertise to flesh out some of the pieces of their topic area and then roll back up their recommendations to the larger task force. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Would you add anything, Ron? Because you also have a lot of knowledge of...
I think you... summarized it perfectly.
Okay.
I think that the end product would be legislation to put advance the cause of all these three.
So the recommendations would be geared toward that.
Right.
The charge really is we have a report, and then legislation is really recommended. But also, I think Chair Lanning would also talk about, you know, what this task force wants to do is talk about things that will really change the social landscape in terms of how we talk about financial literacy and asset development. And some of that's going to be legislative change, and some of it might be different types of change, like advancing a circles of support program or something like that, which is a whole kind of different area. So it's really, I think the big thing, though, is that we definitely want tangible action steps that can be achieved. No report on a shelf.
Didn't they try to pass something several years? I remember Dabney being on some one of the stations saying, we tried to pass something, but there's no money to enforce it or make anything happen. So it really was a bill without teeth kind of thing.
I met with Representative Dabney and Dietrich a couple weeks ago, and they had proposed legislation for the social studies standards, and yes, that... At every time they brought it forward, the Education Committee basically said there was no money to implement it at that time, and so they just kept getting pushed to the back burner. So.
And this will be different because... Sorry, just want to focus.
Well, I think we're coming at it from a different, you know, more of a comprehensive approach in financial literacy at all stages of life, rather than just the social studies standard. And this would just be incorporated as part of the overall package that we're working on.
Ryan?
Well, I would say it's different for a number of reasons. First of all, the bill was a bill, but one legislator put it out there. Any legislation that comes out of this task force would be a bipartisan bill that would be supported by members of both parties and have more than just one legislator involved. So that becomes a much more viable kind of proposal. The second thing is that anything that comes out of here will have been, and not that, you know, I mean, anybody introducing a bill, it's not that it's not thoughtful, I'm not suggesting that, but it could potentially be just one person's idea, whereas something coming out from here that gets the endorsement of eight legislators and two agency folks will be developed by and supported by a group of experts in the field, so that, that there will have been a tremendous, theoretically, a tremendous amount of thought and vetting and consensus around it. So that's why I think whatever comes out of here will be very different from whatever comes before.
And Ron, could you introduce yourself?
Ron Elwood from Legal Aid. Sorry.
Thanks. My last comments may have appeared that I was a little bit biased, but that's not necessarily the case. And in fact, there are several members of the Jumpstart Coalition right at the table, and a couple of former members, and we've been meeting for 5 years. But our recent position statements included, actually, and there was no reference necessarily to what discipline, whether it's business ed or social studies, but one was to integrate financial concepts throughout the curriculum, the K-12 curriculum, and the other was to require a course at the high school level. And we didn't necessarily say who is to be doing it, but keep in mind, and whether it goes through social studies or somewhere else, to bring this into the curriculum, K-12, is a very lengthy process, because they're not licensed to teach an individual course at any level except at the high school level, where we have family and consumer and business teachers that are doing it. So keep in mind, you know, we're talking about a couple of years before any social standards would be revised, and then they'd be going at it very slowly throughout the curriculum, starting at the kindergarten level, and it may ultimately take 12 years to, you know, to really see the fruition, you might say, whereas other states, Missouri, Tennessee, and a few others have been requiring, going to simply requiring the courses. And I think those of us that teach it, you know, we talk to parents a lot, even though the courses are elective courses. They want their kids in there. They see the value. They're getting jobs. They're going out to college, that kind of thing. So we're, you know, as a coalition, we're in favor of both, but, you know, I think there's the long way and then the short way. You know.
So since we do have a number of representatives and certainly people even outside of that with their own expertise, what are our thoughts about, in addition to kind of working at this through the social studies standards, this concept of having, you know, a requirement around a separate, that schools also have a separate, if I have this correctly, have a separate financial education course. Because part of what, you know, has been discussed, we do need to explore kind of what are some of the legislative opportunities to support this work, both in the short term and long term. And this is a two-year group, but we've got a legislative session coming up. And so if we could hear a little bit more about kind of pros and cons to that kind of approach, I think it'd be helpful for the dialogue. I imagine even within your Jumpstart conversations that you've heard different perspectives on it. So could you share any of that?
I don't know, Jane, if you're, I don't have the perspectives. I hear them, but I don't, they're not my perspective.
No, but I mean, if you could even just share.
Well, Jane's here, she might, and Jim has given one and can give more.
Right, or just to piggyback off what Jim was saying, I think I'm also part of the Jumpstart Coalition Board. I mean, the question is, if you want to have personal finance concepts taught beginning at the kindergarten level, I mean, high school is a different issue, but if you specifically think about K-8, what's the best way to ensure that schools will be teaching personal finance at that level? And that's a positive of the social studies standards, for example, because then they would be within those standards, and those standards schools are mandated to teach. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I don't know what the process would be if we wanted personal finance at the K-8 level, how to bring that into elementary and middle school.
Because mm-hmm. There wouldn't be...
I mean, it's my understanding right now there's standards in the core subject areas,
yeah.
Correct? There's not standards on there's mm-hmm. for business education and consumer finance. So we have standards in English, math, social studies, science, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure what other substandard areas there are. So if you wanted to enforce personal finance education in the schools, the question is, mm-hmm. right, what are the strategies that you can do that?
Mm-hmm.
And right now the best vehicle is the social studies mm-hmm. standards, most specifically for the younger grade levels.
Mm-hmm. From an enforcement standpoint.
Or it's a way to really make correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's also existing legislation that substantiates having social studies standards and revising them periodically. I mean, what's being done right now, if I understand correctly from Beth, that's a process that's taking place under existing legislation. There's no new law that needs to be passed for this mm-hmm. revision of social standards, social studies standards to occur. It will occur under current law. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have an opportunity without having to get a bill passed to do something.
Yeah.
There are other opportunities, such as Jim's talking about, that you can look at that require new legislation. Mm-hmm. So there's always a trade-off between, you know, I mean, we have the opportunity to make recommendations, so that's not mm-hmm. off the table by any means. But, it, you know, there's a difference between operating under an existing law and making use of that versus going for a new law, which is somewhat a higher hurdle.
Mm-hmm. And what's exciting about the current standards or the standard revision, what I do know will be happening for these revisions is I believe, I don't know if it's K through 8 or K through 6, but definitely the elementary grades, the standards will be per grade level. So they will say, in kindergarten, you must teach this in first grade. So that really gives a good opportunity for personal finance, for any topic really, to really emphasize what you think are the core themes or subject areas that students need to address at that specific grade level.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, go ahead.
I just think one of the challenges is when you get down to the developmental stage of kindergartners, for example, those are really the building blocks of personal mm-hmm. finance. So you, people start to glaze over when you think about teaching personal finance to kindergartners, but you know that is where math comes in, and that is where choice comes in, and this one is better than this one. And so I wonder if there's been a look anywhere of the kind of the building blocks, and then examining where those are already being. So we don't need to reinvent the wheel if they're already there, and then and articulate that so that people start to see this trajectory over time. And economics has done a good job of that, the Economic Council,
yeah.
of saying where that's embedded in different areas. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that the personal finance side, and perhaps Jumpstart's done that, and I don't know that, you know, because I'm not been in school.
I think nationally Jumpstart has worked on model standards that states can consider, and they have kept those up to date. They're working on keeping them up to date even now. They're also engaged in a dialogue with the U.S. Treasury, you know, which has its own mandate in this area. Mm-hmm. And the Treasury and National Jumpstart are in dialogue over this winter about possibly coming out with more of a joint set of standards for states to consider.
My question is, Dick, has that been those standards? I know they've been in existence, and they're very good. Have they been laid over Minnesota curriculum to say, this is what's happening here, where are the gaps, and where do we need to fill those in? That's what I'm asking.
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I can tell you the answer is probably no.
Okay. But that might be a starting...
I think that's a great starting point place. My name's Bernie Johnson. I'm with Family Means Consumer Credit Counseling. And I had that same thought running around in my head. I actually have a presentation coming up with fifth graders. And that surprised me. We usually don't do a lot of work with young grades, but I'm really excited. So I went onto the Jumpstart website and pulled off a lesson plan that I'll use, and there I'll actually be using the Best Preps Budgeting Matters, but then customizing it for a fifth grade audience. And that lesson plan is for third through fifth graders. And even when I was doing that work, it was going through my mind, interesting, you know, fifth grade teacher wanting us to come in, but they'll start using the stock market game. Mm-hmm. And so I too am wondering, where are the gaps in Minnesota on financial literacy and education?
Jane? I was going to say, no, I think that's the standard revision would be an opportunity to do mm-hmm. so. I mean, unfortunately, we don't all have copies of the social studies standards with us, and I brought this up for the last meeting, but I have mm-hmm. economic standards here. I agree with you that, especially K through 3, it's all about decision making.
Yeah.
Scarcity, you have choices, you need to make decisions.
Yeah.
And those currently are present in the econ mm-hmm. standards for the lower grades, so it would be, I think, it would be beneficial.
Exactly. Thanks. Good little task force.
That'd be really exciting. Yeah, I think we also have to be careful, because when you talk about scarcity, that's really an economic concept, and it's not personal finance. Now, I'm not saying there can't be some relation there, but they really are two different subjects, and I've taught both of the courses, and, you know, I see the kind of the indirect relationship, but because scarcity and some of those things are in there, I don't think that's anywhere close to teaching personal finance skills.
I think, Jim, though, that there are personal finance skills embedded right now, like needs and wants. This is embedded within the first grade social studies standard. Mm-hmm. That is the primary skill, guys, in terms of being personally financially literate. Mm-hmm. Need and want.
And actually, scarcity is pretty good. My college students don't get that idea because they have elastic income. So they don't really get that. That's the problem, is that they don't really get that idea of finiteness of resources.
So your proposal, Kathy, in a sense, is that we take something like the Jumpstart or the National Treasury standards and really spec them out in some sense with regard to the Minnesota standards? I mean, I'm not exactly sure I understand the price, but is there an agreement that in some sense that that's something that would be useful?
I would defer that to someone who's... that's my conceptual idea, but I'm not well-versed in the standards.
No, and I think in our last meeting we discussed even forming a subgroup within, or Dick, I believe you suggested that. I mean, I think that's a value that this committee could bring to the social studies standards revision process, and especially with those on that committee that will be experts in personal finance.
Mm-hmm. And are those the standards right now that they're working around? If the ESEA moves forward, are they going toward those standards coming out, the elementary and secondary, rewrite of those standards? Are those kind of the standards that get held up in terms of personal financial outcomes?
I don't know. They're the only ones I know about, but I don't know. There might be others.
I think if you look at our neighbor state, Wisconsin, and you looked at their entire K-12 curriculum, and I don't know what level, this is actually happening, but at least, you would see that all through the curriculum at all levels, there's a significant personal finance at every level.
Okay.
If you look at the social studies standards in Minnesota right now, you might see whatever it is, 200 pages of social studies and history and all of that, and then you'd see a few very small items about the rule of 72 or something, and it just, to me, there's no comparison at all.
John? Could you introduce yourself, John?
I'm John Comer, and I'm on the Jumpstart Board and also with the Financial Planning Association. And one of the pieces, I talked to Claudia Parliament about the process they're using in the Department of Education, and she mentioned that they do have, I think it's 5 state standards that they are being given to compare our standards to and look for some relationship to try and decide what makes sense. So there are resources there that they will be provided to make those decisions. Going back to an earlier conversation about cost, one of the advantages of embedding it in the social studies curriculum is that there will be costs of implementing its revised social studies curriculum. Imposing or introducing personal finance standards in there will not significantly, perhaps, increase those costs, where creating a new standard requiring new textbooks in all schools around the state, there would be costs that would have to be offset somewhere.
So are you saying that creating a separate course where that's required would have a significant cost? Is that what we're hearing?
I don't like the word significant, but it would have a cost that would be greater than
embedding. So in terms of kind of the pros and cons, that would be a piece that we need to consider in this economic climate.
I just, one of the things we might want to do is try to free ourselves from existing structures that exist, not be constrained so much by it. So let's just say that we really think kids need to master personal finance. Maybe, suggest maybe that there's a really... kids are learning online all the time. Mm-hmm. What's a good online course that cuts to the chase, that doesn't take another teacher? You could do it a different way. You don't need to buy a textbook. I've thrown away the textbook in my college classes because they go out of date as quickly as they get printed. So we use .gov.
MyMoney.gov.
We use the Federal Reserve all the time. We use that's where people are getting their financial information. So let's help our high school kids at least search the web and be good consumers of information. So perhaps we need to get away from just brick and mortar and think about ways that this could be implemented and provide that kind of creativity to the process. I'm not sitting in the school system, so I don't know the constraints, but that might free us. If we don't know the constraints, sometimes we can see some other opportunity. I don't know. Some of you that work in schools could say better. But I think online stuff is really getting to be an opportunity for us to reach more people in a cost-effective way. It's not easy. You have to get really quality stuff done. Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to a course, I guess, it to me anyway, it just makes sense in the high school. Grades 9 through 12, whereas the K-8, how can a teacher see where personal finance fits into what they're already doing? Because teachers do have a lot to do and to get done already. And I'm just reverting back to my experience of a few years in a middle high school setting and working closely with teachers on college prep. It didn't always mean that we needed to have a college prep class. How do you work closely with them and make sure that the kids are getting what they need? And so, I mean, that's going through my mind is, you know, again, when I think of a third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade teacher, what are the resources that can be provided to them, and how do they tie that into what they're already required to do?
So other thoughts about kind of this online model and how that could be potentially supported?
We probably would need, I mean, there are so many good things out there now, but I guess if the state wants something, you know, black and white, something would, I guess, need to be developed. Don't you think that this would be, at least from the beginning, the model that gets used?
Jennifer might be able to speak to this, but it does still take people to monitor and, you know, discussions, et cetera. I mean, it's not without cost, but I'm just thinking about maybe more cost-effective ways to do it rather than having each school, each building have a physical person there.
From what I'm seeing in the high schools currently, people who are teaching personal finance and doing it very well are not using textbooks. Mm-hmm. And Jim can talk about this.
Yeah, exactly. I do not use a textbook. I have something called a Moodle, and everything is linked in there, all these sources, and a lot of it's free. Yeah.
Wells Fargo has our hands-on banking website.
Yes.
I think I would just offer the perspective that I think, you know, thinking about alternate resources like this is an important thing to do, but I don't think we should think that that will take away the need for the teacher to understand what they're teaching.
Absolutely.
And, I think University of Wisconsin's done some interesting research on high school teachers and their understanding of their own personal financial situation, let alone their ability to teach someone else. And, you know, their understanding even of their own financial situation is quite poor.
Yeah.
Their confidence in teaching anyone else to deal with money is even poorer, if anything. So I think the web will not automatically solve that. You still need to deal with getting teachers ready to teach it, and there are, you know, a number of organizations represented around this table who do a good job of that.
I just don't want cost. I mean, I just think we
understand,
need to
care
about cost, because that gets to be the stumbling block, and it never goes anywhere.
The other thing we discussed in our meeting with representatives Daphne and Dietrich was to bring in community experts, the banker, the real estate broker, the financial advisor, the, you know, all of those people can will gladly come in, you know, for a day or for a class period and talk to a group and just maybe make it exciting, impactful, and not a long-term process, but here's how we do it, and it's easy if you, you know, get it all together in one package.
I'd like to know, Jim, and I don't know if there's other people here with the right perspective, I mean, how helpful is that really? Is it, you know, is it just a little icing on the cake, or is it really in and of itself... Does it have impact, or?
I think it validates what we're teaching. To bring somebody into a personal finance course, you know, they're hearing it at home, and then the parents are glad that they're hearing it from me, and then I bring somebody in, and they're hearing it one more time. You know, well, you know, it's kind of triangulation, whatever. But how much impact it has in just any standalone course, I think the answer might be some. Part of the answer might be, you know, who the person is and how effective
so
they are and how they can relate to their age group.
So it's going to depend partly on the presenter and also partly on the milieu or context in which they're coming in.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
We know, we believe, anyway, that it has significant impact. Mm-hmm. And we know that from teachers, from educators who tell us that. Mm-hmm. So most of our curriculum is taught from an outside perspective. When we study whether or not there's an outside person in the classroom in addition to the teacher, mm-hmm. we can see differentiation in terms mm-hmm. of outcomes, because it goes to relevance. It goes to just that additional layer of a teaching methodology that not only teaches the concepts, then puts it into perspective with an outside voice, or puts it into perspective with an activity where they actually have to practice it. Mm-hmm. So our studies say it makes a significant difference.
Mm-hmm. So there's research to really support that could be potentially a best
yeah.
practice.
Yeah.
But I also want to get at and make sure that we cover this concept around how do we, you know, whether it's through the social studies standards, whether, you know, we also look at do we want to promote a separate course and requirement. Either way, there's this issue of kind of ensuring the quality of the teachers, and to what extent do we have the capacity to be training those teachers. And I know that work happens through the council. Maybe you could speak a little bit about kind of what the numbers you're currently serving and kind of the model and kinds of outcomes. And then where that, you know, kind of if the social studies standards, or if there's a separate course and suddenly there's an expectation that more and more people be doing this and that be embedded more formally in the schools, how do we ensure that capacity is there? So maybe just starting by talking about where we are today.
Sure. For teachers specifically, unfortunately, I don't have the numbers with me, but we do offer a course, teacher training for teachers in the summer, a personal finance camp. It's taught by one of our lead instructors, Kurt Anderson. He's a professor up at Duluth. And its curriculum is really focuses on 10 areas of personal finance: saving, investing, insuring, investing in yourself, financial investment. And that is every August we offer that. And I think we've offered that to about 450 teachers since we've offered that for 3 years now. We do, for elementary teachers, a very popular course that we offer through a federal grant is using children's literature to teach economics and personal finance. And that's very popular with elementary teachers because it allows them to incorporate reading with concepts of economics and personal finance. And we even sometimes bridge that also into the math. And that's a course that we've really come to see as an essential course for elementary teachers, and we think that it's very powerful. And then we also offer for students a personal finance decathlon, and the teachers are their coaches for that. Mm-hmm. And that's an opportunity where we're invited to the Fed to have a competition for students. So teachers that do that, they use NEPI materials, they use all these resources that are available on Jumpstart materials on the Internet to coach their students on also areas of personal finance.
And some of them sometimes win state championships.
You won a state championship, sorry.
Well, that was the first year, but second year they didn't hold up for that.
Well, you can't win them all, but you did.
They made it there.
And these are wonderful resources for existing teachers, but it really does not hit on the issue of teacher accountability. These yes. are courses that teachers volunteer mm-hmm. to take,
yes.
but there is no governing body. We really want to get at our teachers prepared to teach personal finance. We need to make sure that they're following the teacher standards mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the licensure issues.
Yeah, I think what it does get at is that if we want to get teachers ready to do it, I think we do know how to do that. There's a question of, you know, could we bring it to a greater scale if we had to and all that? That would take more resources. But we do know how to do it. And not only, have the course been well received, and Kurt gets great evaluations on it, but Rich McDonald and Ken Reback at St. Cloud State and another person from Nebraska recently did a research study of whether, you know, that kind of training works. And they found clearly that it did. They have a nice randomized study where some teachers got training on a curriculum and used it. Other teachers used the curriculum without training. And the difference in student outcomes was quite clear, that those who got the training, you know, the students did much better. So we have evidence that training teachers works. and we have knowledge of how to do it. So if there, you know, it might take more resources to expand it if we wanted to get everyone to the level you're talking about. But it's not that we don't know how. We do know how. We know it works. And, you know, and if you, you know, in addition, if you don't trust the kind of research that, that Rich and Ken did, you can come to events where that I've seen with the council where the teachers just come in. Some of the teachers have won awards for their teaching and come in and just say how, you know, totally clueless and scared to death they were when they got that assignment and, you know, how much the training meant to them. It's really quite another different evidence. But we do know how to do it.
Well, yes, but it's true that these are voluntary. The teachers have to decide to take these courses. And that's always a challenge, I think, for all of us that do training or human capacity development.
In the research paper, although I don't know if we, maybe it was voluntary, but it was a randomized control group, though. In that research, it's not a, there's not a problem in that research paper with, you know, only people who wanted to do it did the training. It was randomized, so it's a valid scientific comparison.
On a particular curriculum, though, right?
It was a particular curriculum, that's true. You know, it's hard enough to do one study. You can't study all curricula.
No, it was one particular curriculum.
Yeah. But it was the same curriculum across the whole study. It happened to be one of the National Council of Fitness for Life curricula. But you know, that's not a radically different curriculum than what the other groups would have. It's a fairly standard piece of curriculum. I think the core message there was that training does work, and we know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Ron and then Gina.
Let's switch
it. So it seems like we're all supportive of the same direction, although maybe not. So that's the, you know, that's the question. Why wouldn't we recommend a mandate of financial literacy standards being dropped into social studies?
And I just have a question of, it kind of links to that, saying, do we think this task force or this group has the grassroots support necessary to push new legislation through, and how then would that discussion be linked to what the final outcome is? Like, hey, we say we were going to mandate a new course in financial literacy. Do we think, as a task force, that we have the grassroots capacity to push that through? Would Education Minnesota, for example, be in favor, be opposed, or be neutral on like a subject like this? I mean, that would be my question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I think it inspires a different question. Do we think we are representative of the state of Minnesota to answer that question? Mm-hmm. Second of all, I think we make a recommendation without any filters. I mean, how it gets done isn't our job, is it? I mean, it's not a fun... If we say a pure recommendation is this, and this is our rationale for it, then the hard work becomes how we make that happen. But should that be our filter toward our recommendation?
Well, I'd like to hear from Ron on that, since this is the university he kind of lives in. But before you kind of respond to that, I think the one thing I'd like to say is that I think this group is a good representation, and I think it gives us a good vehicle as a starting point. But I think ultimately it's up to all of us to take on the onus of then talking to our various stakeholders that we're aware of and ensuring that you know, whatever is agreed upon here, we're building consensus and kind of vetting and really, you know, gain a better understanding of what those politics are and what those challenges are, and seeing if we indeed can't build consensus and support to move something forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, to answer that question, I think you're right in the sense that this work group, your role is to make the best recommendation you can, and I don't think the politics necessarily should be something that prevents you from making a recommendation that you think is the right one. At the same time, obviously, you know, you should be informed by the politics, and perhaps, so for example, since it's December and the session starts in 3 weeks, you know, maybe this would be something you would suggest in the, you know, we have the short-term, long-term buckets, and this might be something that would, you would say, you know, this is really where we want to go. But given the calendar, maybe this is a 2011 proposal that, you know, and because this work group's going to be meeting period, because you're not bound by the legislature. I mean, a few of us actually hang out here, but, you know, I mean, this is going to be an ongoing process. So it strikes me that, you know, the first filter would be do the right, you know, recommend the right thing. The second then filter is inform that recommendation based on some, you know, pragmatic realities. The question that I had that I don't know, because I'm not in the education field, is when teachers are coming out of St. Kate's and the various schools that produce our teachers, is this at all a twinkle in anybody's eye?
No. I didn't not think, systematically.
I didn't think so. And so
actually, it is.
Is it?
In the business education area,
yes.
5-12 business educators are prepared to teach personal finance. It's actually part of our national organization standards.
Yeah,
and
but not social
business
studies.
Teachers are very aware.
Well, you know, it strikes me that, you know, this is, again, because you don't know where it's going to land. It may wind up in the social studies standards. You guys are, I've learned a lot from you. Thank you very much. And so it strikes me that, you know, and the other thing that I know is that teachers sometimes go move within discipline sometimes. So one day they're a science teacher, tomorrow they're a math teacher, maybe.
If not that easy.
Well, I know my daughter is in that situation, and she's taught both. But anyway, my point is that is there some way that one of the recommendations to be developed might be working with the schools that produce our teachers to make these concepts core concepts that everybody should learn one way or another? Because, you know, it would seem to me that even if, you know, it's in a different discipline, there may be applicability. And if teachers are familiar with it, if they're comfortable with it, if new teachers coming up, I mean, we don't have to put it all in this mm-hmm. little box, do we? I mean, this could be imparted in a variety of ways. So I don't. This is just off the top of my head. I have very uninformed, more of a question than a suggestion. But if that makes any sense, maybe that's an area to start to investigate.
There was legislation a year or two ago that affects MinSCU clearly, and to some extent the U of M, that affects all their students, not just their teaching students. But, you know, in MinSCU, colleges are now required to do some personal financial education for all their students. Now, would that get them to the point where you'd call them a certified teacher? No. But, you know, that's a new thing, and this group can look at, you know, the issue you're raising, but I just want to know, there was already recent legislation that MinSCU is still adapting to that requires them to teach their students.
Well, and then maybe there's a way to get some support for that. Maybe build on that for the training that the expertise and the training that's available that you know about, that you all know about. And then the other, isn't there a private college council that?
Yep.
And so I don't know. They obviously the state is not going to tell them what to do.
Not so much.
But nonetheless, I mean that should certainly not be ignored. Is there some way we can, you know, incorporate that as well? And Kathy,
I was just going to say it would be interesting, Dick, to look at how that's being implemented. I have not heard that at the U. So
the U is only kind of voluntary.
We were encouraged.
Yeah, encouraged. MinSCU is required.
But even there was a study that I ran across that was it really looked at what colleges were doing, and it seems like it's typically coming out of the financial aid office, particularly around repayment of loans. So I think sometimes they can check the box.
Well, it will vary, but there are some good models in Minnesota already. And Laurie
that would be good to see.
Laurie Hendrickson has a group together that could tell you a lot about that.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things that this grew out of actually adult education. We've been kind of looking at a more of a lifespan look at financial literacy. We're kind of stuck on K-12 right now because mm-hmm. of the social studies standards issue. But it one of the nice things, I think, about this group is it lets us not just get into the politics only there, but look at how a lifespan approach to financial literacy might happen, and that would be through human services agencies, or people get touched in that way, but also through workplace education, which, you know, when you, we can do college students, we touch a bunch of people there, but not everybody goes to college, and they go right into the workforce, and how can we encourage things in the workplace that, you know, when people are looking at benefits, that's a very teachable moment for them to start thinking about savings, you know, retirement benefits, et cetera. But I think that around the teaching piece, we've found that, at least my sense, is that there are a lot of people in the financial literacy that are being asked to teach this, not just at schools but outside, but they are not prepared. Social workers are not prepared at all. Human services professionals really are not prepared. Bernie, you know, we've talked about this. And they're asked, then now they're teaching it. Similar to what teachers are, they're struggling with their own personal financial management, and then they're expected to teach it. So, they, you know, we have some opportunity to do training, which is where there's a group of us trying to develop some kind of a certification program that is, you know, could be both for on-campus teacher preparation that's a little bit more substantial than one course, or bringing a guest speaker in for a couple of classes to cover the base for teacher prep, which is my understanding for some places, not necessarily business ed. That's what happens. It's like they have a two-week course in the middle of the summer, and that's kind of check that box. But what I understand also is the Board on Teaching has a big role in this whole thing, and that the licensure standards or endorsements about who can teach. Now, this is new language I'm learning since I held a secondary ed licensure many moons ago. So anyway, I think there's so much there that we could kind of get our hands around, and maybe around the longer approach where we do a little bit more work to understand that whole arena. But I think the task force would benefit from looking a little bit more broadly across these arenas and finding out where we could dovetail some of these training opportunities to reach multiple audiences with similar kinds of materials on the table.
Well, and I want to make sure we don't, that we recognize that that's the whole idea of the lifespan, that as soon as we get to the work plan, which we will get to, that part of it will be looking at those different strategies and how we kind of carry this through. So,
I just quickly note, just for Ron, that on behalf of Jumpstart, I coordinate a network called On Campus, which tries to pull in staff and faculty from private and public colleges in Minnesota who are interested in financial education. So if we do want to, like, ask them about anything like that, I don't have all of them. Not everyone's joined up, but I do have a couple dozen or so in that network, and I could poll them if the group wants. So let me know.
Would people like that?
Would that be useful? Pull them around.
Well, yeah, you'd have to tell me what. We can come back to that later. I'll just throw it out. Now, Jim.
Just a couple of comments here, and one is what I think we shouldn't do, and maybe the other is what we should look at possibly doing. And you know, I'm referencing some of your comments that you just made here. But one, I think we can make recommendations and then just leave them hang out there and assume that the Department of Education is going to take care of things. I think that's a real mistake, that they don't have the expertise. The last round of the social studies standards, you know, they didn't come up with anything. I think they need to turn to people that are doing it, you know, at either the high school, college level, people that are trained in this area. And then secondly, and I've done some research on the Missouri standards and what they did there, and it appears to me that the whole process was very collaborative, you might say, and that social studies and business teachers and family and consumer teachers and the council played key roles in ultimately what they created, which was to require a course. They have a whole curriculum. And it's my understanding that it was modeled after the some kind of a blend of the family and consumer and business education standards. And it didn't necessarily say that it had to be taught by one group or another, but if somebody did not have training, I think they would have to go through training, you know, somehow get the training if they were in social studies and didn't have any background in that. So, you know, I believe in, you know, having that kind of approach. I think it's going to bear more fruits later on by doing that.
So when we talk about recommendations, too, I think we're also talking about a couple issues of ways of approaching personal finance. We also have to decide, I mean, this isn't our responsibility to decide this, but I think, Dick, was it North Dakota that they actually came up with themes that they felt each high school senior needed to know by the time they graduated? So there's also, what do people need to know? What do K-12 students need to know in personal finance? And then who's going to bring that to them? And those are the two issues that, if we make recommendations, I think those are kind of two branches that we need to think about the recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Well, a thought running through my mind, too, is how students these days are so motivated by extra credit. And if there isn't room for, and I'm not saying I'm against, but I'm just saying if there isn't room for a course with the good stuff that's out there, how can teachers use that as an opportunity to have a student then increase their grade, you know, in a class on, you know, well, this is what you need to do. And then that what they need to do is that whole financial literacy education piece. You know, if there was a two-week, you know, opportunity for them to do some extracurricular work outside of the classroom. And I'm getting back to, so glad that the business teachers are getting the financial literacy, you know, training and education that they need. But a lot of teachers I come across, and a lot of them, even though I'm older, they are just graduating from college, have never done anything, a course or anything at their school on financial literacy. And so I guess, is it that we're just trying to target the teachers coming out of college, you know, the business teachers, or are we trying to look at all teachers? Because I think there's a significant amount of teachers that would need some additional training on doing that. But then again, it gets into the how much, you know, which to me falls back to, is it a course? Because if it's a course, of course the teacher is going to need some training on that. Or if it's just concepts that they're building into what they're already doing. I don't know. Those are thoughts running through my mind.
One thing that I could see supporting, picking up on Kathy's comment about the workplace, is good workplace-based training for teachers, so that new teachers at least understand their own benefits package, their own pension plan, and get some, you know, I think you can kill a couple birds with one stone right there if you had some good training for incoming teachers in the workplace that would cover both aspects, their personal life and maybe give them a seed for what they can pass on to students as well.
The Itasca group did some work on this this space, and we'd need to get an update on it, but
they
had the cream of the crop supporting this. Steve Sanger, Brad Anderson, I mean, they had the voices, Jim Campbell, I think, or John, one of the two of them were on it, and they drove it into their companies with this exact mission. And I don't know,
we met with them, and I will say, as ambitious and wonderful as the work that they did, you know, was and is, I'm not sure kind of where it's at today.
Yeah.
They never took on integrating financial education. It was about opting out of retirement plans. And then getting people to do automatic deposits.
I think they were stepping into trying to understand how to get a comprehensive plan in place.
Yeah.
So it's probably worthy of an update on where they're at.
Yeah. You spend a lot of time trying to get them to say anything, they won't do it.
I want to throw out one idea for discussion. Because I think a number of things have come up that we want to make sure to get back to in the context of a work plan. Certainly core competencies, what do we do to support this work outside of the classroom? But I want to get back to the teacher capacity piece and wondering, is there any value in us looking at, should there be some kind of certification for teachers that are going to teach this, either in addition to getting the social studies, the teaching licensure, that when they go through, whether it's a counsel's program or whether it's some other teacher program, that there's some kind of not only core competencies that they then have to, you know, hit on, but in turn then get tested or just get certified and then have to maintain that certification so that there's some, whether it's CU or something, because it is such a dynamic universe. And so I'm wondering, are there concerns also just around having a course on something and then 10 years later be teaching it, and how do you ensure that you're staying abreast on these issues? And so I just want to throw that out.
I guess my first reaction in some ways would be, I'd rather, and this might be impossible, but I'd rather assess whether the kids learned something. And, you know, and if they don't, you're out. But because I'd like to know what the kids are learning anyway. So I'd really rather, I've never endorsed, or I've always been neutral, neither for nor against a mandate of a standard, because I don't know enough about the demands on teachers and whether they can squeeze in another man. I just don't know enough. So I stay out of that. But I've been more inclined to want to know whether the students know something. Mm-hmm. So I tend to be more supportive of actually assessing whether our students know something. Mm-hmm. And while there is the danger that a teacher would temporarily, you know, screw up and do a bad job once, if you knew whether the students were learning, you could hopefully get them out of there. And if I had to choose between testing teachers and testing students, I'd choose testing students.
Well, to that point, I've been entrusted by Representative Shemansky to convey an idea that he has asked me to convey. So it's not my idea, it's his, but I think it's not a bad one. He was thinking about, for the 2011 session, now I don't know exactly how he would be implemented, but his point is, wouldn't it be a good idea to get a baseline sense of where students are now? So I think it goes to your point, Dick, coming at it a slightly different way, which is to figure out, you know, what's the level of financial awareness generally now? I mean, if everybody already knows it's dismal with students and it's not necessary, that's a different story. But he's suggesting that we do a junior high school survey to be voluntary, so we wouldn't, you know, because part of the issue is it's going to be difficult to place mandates on schools in this session, because whatever you tell them to do, there's a cost involved, and it's just going to be really, real, that is politically very hard. But, you know, of course, he is now in the majority party, and if he's suggesting that this is something that might be feasible to at least get them get some baseline. And he's suggesting that it could be produced and distributed by a nonprofit or, you know, one of the folks here, and the results submitted to the local school boards and to the legislature. So I throw that out, that he suggested that. He's also suggested something regarding, because we talked about the problem of kids not knowing percentages early on, and he said it should be incorporated in early elementary instruction. I assume it is.
Well, not too early, but yeah. fourth graders, third, fourth grade.
So anyway, again, this is him. Yeah. I've done my job.
One comment on Jumpstart.
Yes.
We haven't done it for a couple of years, but, I mean, there is a national, and we had state-specific results.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
If you want a one-time indicator of whether Minnesota is different, mm-hmm. then the 2008 results for Minnesota from the National Jumpstart Survey, where we got the Minnesota breakout, the 2008 breakout for Minnesota says we're not different. We're like
failing.
Everybody else.
And
like 50, yeah, basically half the kids mm-hmm. got 70% or more. Mm-hmm. A little, it was like slightly over half in Minnesota, and like 52 or 53 here and 49 nationally. That's not statistically different. So roughly half got over 70% here and nationally. Roughly half didn't. That's not particularly good. So if it's a one-time assessment of whether we're good, we know we're not.
But that's a high school.
But if we want more than that, on the knowledge side.
That's really important.
Yeah, the behavioral stuff is different.
We don't know.
The other piece is that if after you know where they are now, you have to find out where they are after we do something. Mm-hmm. And see if there's been a change.
Right.
So
right. He was just suggesting to get a baseline. You're suggesting there is some degree.
There is. No, that was not.
He didn't know.
That was, by the way, that was 2008, and it was like I think 16 or 17 high schools. They're not fully represented. They were random. The universe we could pick from was randomly selected. out of that randomly selected universe, the ones who opted in to do it mm-hmm. was not random. Mm-hmm. So it's quasi-random.
And the students yeah. could not have at least currently been in a personal finance
yeah.
class.
It had to be. They had to be tested in a non-economics, non-personal finance class. It didn't say they couldn't have had one somewhere, but they, it wasn't. It was in like an English class or a history class
that
where they were tested.
That was the class that was selected to be
so
that, tested.
Yeah, so that the students were representative, roughly representative of the whole school. They weren't picked out to be finance students.
So something we could do again.
So that we have.
Well, it'll be. It does. They do it every other year, so that.
No, they don't now.
Oh.
They didn't do it in 2010, and I think they're changed their model. I had last time I talked to Laura Veen, they haven't decided what they're doing next. I don't know if you guys have read.
Well, something just came out on
okay.
that. They're going to do something in the near future. Yeah. They're piloting something right now.
We haven't really taught personal financial literacy in the last 2 years, and I don't know why the numbers are changing.
Oh, some schools do, some schools don't.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to select those schools that do and make them?
No. I don't think this is my. The numbers, Jumpstart did this from like 2000 to 2008 nationally. They are doing something new now. Between 2000 and 2008, the numbers never changed. They were just flat at 50% basically. I mean, they wiggle from 49 to 52 and down to 51 and up to 53 and back to 49. But, I mean, they're basically flat at 50. So you don't see trends very much.
The other thing I should mention, which kind of addresses both of your comments, is that there's the national... The Department of Treasury has a financial mm-hmm. capability right. challenge, and my students have participated. Many of them, when they were in the course, even though they took it before the course was over, I would say most of them scored 90 to 100% on that. Now, I know that was not designed for that purpose. Anybody could take it, but I think there could be a way that you know we could work with that. They do it in the spring of the year, where you could control certain groups and have a personal. You could ask a question in there. Did you ever have what was your level of training? And you could sort if they had a course, if they didn't have a course. And again, that was not the purpose. It was more for recognition. Where they wouldn't.
Get a certificate.
Recognized certificate, those that that did well in it.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that's an instrument we could use.
Right.
Just a question, and maybe Wells Fargo could help answer this one. But when we're with adults, a lot of the challenge around poverty is that people are unbanked or they don't have a good relationship with the financial industry. And I wonder if we've ever tried to do that, at least with... in the high school area, where we connect the financial literacy to a good banking experience and try to get them more familiar with the products and how they make good decisions about products, so that we, again, keeping the poverty, this is really kind of the universal approach to anti-poverty, is to get them equipped before that they make decisions that will perhaps jeopardize their financial security. But I, especially... if they have parents that aren't unbanked, et cetera. So I don't know if that intervention has ever been done with.
Oh, there are models like that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure JA's got some bankers who come in, and there have been banks in the school models and things like that.
And do we do that in Minnesota real regularly?
I don't know about that.
No.
Well, I'm trying to find the link between knowledge and behavior. I think the relevance piece is really important, and that the. I get students at the college level that get bombarded with, not as much anymore, but used to be credit card offers, and mm-hmm. they have no really, this is recorded, so I won't say that, but anyway, there are ways that cards get marketed that are more or less conducive to good financial decision making on college campuses, better now, but I think that's sometimes when that It's real-time knowledge connected with their opportunity to make a decision. And 10th graders start to earn money and they buy cars, et cetera. But it's how we link those, I think, to the real-time decisions that make for really effective. At least that's what the research shows. So the knowledge behavior link happens when they are ready to absorb it and they can apply it right away. So I don't know, some of those kinds of things I think
maybe. Yeah, and I know Kevin Ryan, who runs our credit card company, has been involved in a national board that's been looking at that for a long time. How do you inform students about their choices? at the time they're getting those first choices handed to them.
Well, maybe we could hear a little bit about kind of how Junior Achievement's done that and what you've been measuring so we can better understand this model that is clearly reaching a number of students, a large number.
Reach about 120,000, about 110 in Minnesota each year. But keep in mind, guys, it's a community perspective. It's the TCFs and the Wells Fargo and the Best Buys. It's the business perspective on this, okay, which I think is critical as we continue to look at our recommendation for the state of Minnesota. And so that's really the perspective that Junior Achievement brings to a discussion. And I think the model certainly becomes more understandable when you realize that's the perspective that we take on this. Because our primary delivery model is through the schools, okay? 110,000 kids during the school day, which typically supplements social studies curriculum or business, or we're starting to have a bigger place in mathematics. 24 programs that deal with economic literacy. Okay, so financial literacy is simply one of three focuses. It's similar to the council's definition, the role of a citizen, the role of a consumer, and the role of a worker. So we do a lot on workforce readiness and bringing the application to all these skills across the board. Okay, their role as a citizen in a democracy. And but we do have four very focused programs on personal finance. And those four programs have become a big focus of ours for the past couple years because the community has come to us and said, personal financial literacy is it. This is a priority for us, okay? And again, keep in mind, it's predominantly business and parents that are telling us that. So we've put a lot of resources into specifically two out of these four programs. And we're watching a third, which is called Personal Finance. It was developed in partnership with NEFI, and it supplements the full-fledged semester NEFI course, but it's taught from another perspective. So again, an outside perspective. Somebody from Wells comes in and brings the relevance to that textbook teaching. We have what's called JA Finance Park that actually Trish's organization has evaluated two strands for us. And that was originally written as 24 lessons targeted at middle school with a very strong simulation that acts as the capstone event to that program. So middle school, 24 lessons taught by a classroom teacher, different than our traditional model now. It's not taught by a volunteer. We hand curriculum to a classroom teacher. Jim teaches some of it. And they typically are supplementing a business curriculum or, again, at the middle grade level, it's a mathematics curriculum. They're teaching these lessons, and then they go into a simulation. The simulation, we have a facility in Maplewood that acts as a free market economy, and they actually run their life through budgetary decisions and choices that they're making based off of a fictional life situation. And we were limited in terms of capacity with that simulation, so we piloted an online version of that simulation, which worldwide is now developing into a much more robust simulation. And Trish's group evaluated that the efficacy of that model. So we know it works, okay? Funded by the private sector for the most part. There is some public funding that goes to student fees. But again, one of the primary outcomes is bringing relevance to these basic concepts that we're teaching these kids. We've worked with the council in terms of getting this to teachers and doing some teacher training on this. And it is a strong focus of ours to move this one program forward quickly in terms of growth. Again, that motivation is coming from the community. Okay, so it's not coming from, I think we're seeing some interest from educators, actually a lot of interest from educators because they don't necessarily have the curriculum
And they're also looking for some experiential model in which to bring that relevancy. But the engine behind this is the Wells Fargo's and the Thrivents and private sector who's saying this is critical for us to develop our economy is this knowledge base. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing some natural motivation from teachers, from educators who feel just as we do that this is important concepts in which to teach our children. They're either embedding JA across the K-12 model within social studies predominantly as they try to address these economic standards. So JA is helping to do that. And we do hear that that is a motivation in which to bring JA into their classroom because they got to teach these economic standards, which we correlate strongly to. And then there's some secondary benefits. One is teaching their own curriculum through a relevancy model or experiential model. And that's, I think, where the math teachers come in. And bringing the community in, which sits within a lot of strategic plans in school districts, is partnering with the community at certain levels. So does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Is that what you were looking for,
Andrea? Can you share any thoughts around how this could be scaled up?
Yeah. Well, I think that's why this online model is of interest to us, because we cover all of Minnesota, all of North Dakota, and parts of Wisconsin out of our office here. And so the simulation component, as Trish evaluated, was a critical component to get to certain learning levels. We knew that there's no way in heck we could bus kids to Maplewood, for this simulation. So this online simulation is becoming a critical strategy for us to scale this. This particular model, this online model, costs us roughly $30 a kid. So when you start to look at roughly, 70,000 kids in the state of Minnesota per grade level, if we scaled it to 100%, that's in essence what this program would cost to do that. Mm-hmm. It has scalability. Mm-hmm. But, you guys, again, we don't operate in a mandated environment. That's not our model. Right. That's not our motivation. Could and would we find our work easier if there was a mandated environment? I kind of share Dick's perspective on this. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. Because I think the state of Minnesota is so local control based, mm-hmm. that to mandate it in a certain curriculum or at a certain grade level, I'm not sure philosophically that correlates to who we are. That being said, I think there is some merit in saying we believe personal financial literacy is a critical outcome for being, for developing the state of Minnesota, for being a citizen of this state, mm-hmm. and we are going to mandate it K-12 somewhere. Mm-hmm. Each district's got to figure this out, where they're going to do it and how they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And then I think the strategies follow. The teacher certification, the other work then gets dropped in as a result of that mandate. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you're going to drive more teacher certification unless there's a motivation for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're just speaking, it seems such a complete, this clash. I'm sure if you asked every teacher in Minnesota if they should graduate kids that are financially literate, they'd all say yes. There wouldn't be one single person.
Yeah. We agree.
There's not
on
one
outcome.
Single person
yeah.
in this room.
Yeah.
And yet, say, well, then we should mandate it. Oh, wait a minute. That just seems so inconsistent to me. It just, there's something goofy about that idea, that if there's such broad consensus,
well,
almost universal.
Well, let's talk about budgeting.
Funny.
Let's talk about budgeting.
Yeah.
Which I don't mean state budgeting.
Yeah.
I mean time budgeting.
Yeah.
We agree that we want personal financial literacy. We agree that we want physical fitness. We agree we want arts. We agree we want English. We agree we want history. We agree we want
yeah.
math. We agree we
Priorities.
Want science.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're up to about a 26-hour day, 8 days a week.
I wonder where people would put personal put that on the hierarchy. However, I bet you that would be way up there for almost everybody.
Yeah, I bet it depends how you frame the question.
Depends what they're being tested on.
If you frame the question,
well, I understand it's complex. I'm not trying to minimize the complexity. I'm just saying, if you really strip it away to its bare bones, you know, if we really believe that this is the underpinning of our economy and the future of our economy, the future of our state, but yet we can't figure out a way to overcome all these other parochial obstacles, it seems odd to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you have such a consensus, generally things go pretty smoothly, but not in this situation.
I think where you can get into trouble is if you try to mandate in too much detail how to get there. Because then you can start to add up to way more than the school day.
Right.
If you have a mandate that we need certain outcomes and we're going to hold you accountable and you have to figure it out, that might be more workable. I'm not sure.
Which is, I think, what Colorado got to, right? We're going to mandate personal finance K-12 somewhere. Local school districts are going to decide how they're going to do it, and it's going to be tested in math. I'm not suggesting that's the answer, but that's how they answer those questions.
There's an outcome we agree we need. There's going to be some kind of accountability. We'll give you help to get there, but you just have to figure it out.
Well, that's a good model.
Then maybe that can cut across some things.
Georgia did something similar, although I want to say it's getting tested through social studies.
Okay.
And it's the testing is, I mean, they'll admit that it doesn't necessarily get it too much improvement.
Are you talking about classroom testing, or are you talking about the testing that happens on the state level?
So there's both.
Okay.
There's both,
Because I would think that the testing that happens at grade level wouldn't matter where it comes.
Yeah, there's whether or not you pass, the course and the components of the course, and then there's testing or standards and entries. Yeah, exams done. So is that something that people would want to spend more time kind of exploring, is this model that some of the other states have of kind of these broad, this broad requirement without getting too specific?
How does that feel to you, Jim, as an educator?
Well, I think we should definitely look at what other states have done. And
but how would you react to that K-12 financial literacy mandate somewhere? How would Eden Prairie look at that?
The comment I was going to make, and Trish has her children in Eden Prairie schools too, but...
I hope that's, you're not
going to
hold that again.
I do too, Trish, so let's see how he does.
A couple of things. First of all, we require 54 now, I think, credits to graduate. And of those 54, there's a significant number that are required. You have to have so many math and science and so forth, but there's plenty of room there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, what happens if you require it, then that kind of cuts into, other electives, or maybe they're not going to take art or something else. I mean, so you get into that little turf battle. But and then the other thing is, from the higher education standpoint, and this is where it gets political, I think, is that the parents want the students, they all want, in Eden Prairie anyway, their students are going to go on to college and they're going to take all these courses of rigor, that type of thing, and then that's not viewed as rigor. It's not even barely offered except in your department and maybe a couple other areas at the post-secondary level, so it's not a driver, and that's the problem. And
maybe we require that as an entrance, requirement, financial literacy.
Right.
Yeah. Eden Prairie would just want it at 8th grade. That would be their answer.
Or they would want to be able to take it in summer school.
Summer school, right.
Yeah. So they don't have it on their regular school transcript.
So there's some challenges with that.
Yeah.
No, for the really college-oriented kids, I saw that when my son was in there. They bend over backwards and do crazy things to keep classes like this off of their regular year transcript.
But I will tell you, when they get to college, everyone that goes through my class, not maybe it's just because I'm the stellar teacher. I don't think that's true. They say that this should be a mandated course for every kid in college to take.
Right, yeah, mm-hmm. I teach the same course and it's the same thing.
That's
right. Outside of our family special science discipline. That I'm getting students from.
Yeah.
It gets filled up right away, and there's students waiting.
both.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just want to mention, we, three of us business teachers, talked to somebody in your department last spring, and this might be part of the solution. You know, if you develop, not an AP, but as you call it at the U, college, college in the school.
Yes.
Curriculum.
Really?
And we went to, I can't think of her name, I'm sorry.
Virginia Zucker.
Yeah. And she, you know, three of us business teachers currently teaching personal finance, both on the Jumpstart board, Candy and Kristen. And we said, you know, what if we did something like this, you know, that we create so that potentially they could take this course at the high school level, be given college credit for it.
I'd love to talk to you about that.
So there's strategies for kind of doing this in the through a high school college partnership. I'm sorry, Amy, what were you going to say?
Go ahead.
I also want to make sure that we fully kind of vet this idea of a broad kind of standard and legislation around that, because we do have a legislative session coming up, and if it's not this one, you know, what kind of further discussion do we want to have to really feel like we've grappled with that issue.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, in terms of this legislative session too, and this seems to be where the energy is around something about this sort of standard piece. And it could be something that is introduced as an idea bill at the end of the session to kind of tee up for next session, as if you feel like you have some information after you've looked at other states and what they're offering as well. I think that you shouldn't. I think if there is something that's ready to go this session, that's great. But if there's not, that's okay. And you don't want to invent something just to have something. So,
is it the timeline of the social studies rewrite that we're feeling the stress of?
Yeah.
Which has to happen in 2011.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we're starting the committee in, I think, another 1 to 2 months. And then it's going to happen over a period of, if you remember, a few months.
The spring.
Yeah. So it all happens this year and goes to the commissioner and all that. So we just want to make sure we weren't losing out on an opportunity there. So that's why, you know, rather than starting with the work plan and starting with kind of some of these broader things that I think are so important and have come up, we want to make sure we're fully kind of delving into this piece.
But it is true that asking or making a recommendation that something be included in the social studies curriculum is separate and distinct from, do we also have a class in high school, or do we also have this broad mandate that says you will meet these standards, figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So the social studies curriculum, if we wanted to recommend that, is time sensitive, but the other pieces are less so.
Absolutely. I think it's just, it's part of that larger K-12 that the social studies standard started that discussion, but you're right, the others don't have that same time sensitivity, other than if for some reason people felt really strongly about pushing forward something now, but I'd be surprised. Only in the sense of wanting to make sure.
Now, by the way, there are several districts, I shouldn't say several, there might be more. Mary Flesberg, our MBEI president, did a survey of business teachers to find out who was teaching it, and it was very informal, but there were several, I want to say at least several schools, I don't know how many, where they had mandates, and I just heard that Hopkins just required it, and Anoka Hennepin, the largest school district in the state, fell one vote short of it, and it sounded like it was going to come back for a reevaluation again, too. So things are happening locally.
So would people be interested in terms of kind of next steps around this particular arena of bringing back some national, some research and some information as to what other states are doing and how, what we know about that, those models, and exploring how we may want to look at that information for Minnesota? Is that an area of interest?
For me, it would be.
Does that include Kathy's idea of looking at, you know, the standards and Minnesota needs to?
I guess I thought that's what I heard Andrea say. Maybe I wasn't.
Well, Andrea said what other states are doing. I thought Kathy was talking about like
kind of a mapping idea. James,
I think there's the standards, and then there's also the courses.
having specific courses on personal finance. It would be mapping the curriculum and then also seeing which states offer specific courses in personal finance that are required.
Right, and if you want a quick view of that, you can go right to the National Jumpstart site.
Yes, and you can see which states.
Right.
I'd like to see within our own state. I guess for me, I'm just more of a, I'm curious now, like within our county system, you know, mostly like where are, who's doing the most with financial literacy work.
So for the K-12, I think probably the answer is yes, we do want somehow to get a comparison across states and to national standards somehow.
Did I hear correctly that the Hopkins district is now requiring personal finance?
I heard that from some pretty reliable sources.
We should explore that, see how they did it and what, because that's the only one I know.
So who would be willing to do kind of what before a next meeting in terms of pulling together some of this information and maybe making a call to the Hopkins, finding out what they're doing with some of these components?
I'm willing to help it on this national standards side, at least. I don't know the Hopkins side. But.
Can't you teach in Hopkins?
Wayzata, I think.
Wayzata. I can try to find out what's going on in Hopkins. It's my understanding, and I personally, the ones I've seen, and I haven't really researched this, and more has happened since maybe I've looked at the curriculum as in Missouri and Tennessee was it sounded like they were on the same track 2 years ago when I went out to the National Jumpstart meeting, that they were really moving forward on their curriculum. It sounded like it was going to look a little bit like Missouri's, but so other states are kind of developing, and what goes on is, it's kind of a fluid process, you might say. And But I can try to get perhaps what I can bring in is I can talk to Marita Bush, who's our regional director for Jumpstart, or even to Laura, the national president, and just get a report or an update on what's going on there too. So I can do one local thing and then maybe one more national.
Does the council have any of that information as a national entity pulled together?
Well, there's the report that we looked at the first meeting from the National Council.
Yeah, the survey states.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if you had done other research as a part of that.
No, I think we also rely on Jumpstart research a lot for personal finance surveys. I was talking with Lori Hendrickson, and who's the woman at the extension who has the NEPI survey that's coming out?
Sharon Danis?
Yes. What is the status with that?
Yeah. Well, Sharon's research is about just the efficacy of the implementation of NEPI.
It's a high school financial planning program.
Yeah, national. Yeah. The NEPI high school financial planning program. And but so that's an evaluation of one curriculum that's, and I don't know if she just did it in Minnesota school. I'm not sure if it's only Minnesota schools or not.
The last one is national.
It's national.
I don't know, and what I was talking about earlier is trying to take the Jumpstart standards and map them onto Minnesota curricula. Mm-hmm. But that's a big process because that's like looking at, you have to have an insider that knows where to find, like what's mandated and how. I think that's a big project. And maybe it's something that we shoot for a long term. But it has to be people that are very much involved with this. I would say somebody at the Department of Education that could say, these are the requirements and graduation.
Would that be part of the social studies standards rewrite that they would do that or not?
Well, they'll do it around social studies, but I thought what I was thinking is that we would look at other places where some of this might happen and see where there are gaps. So if it happens in math, what are the things that happen in math? Do we have a handle on it? Maybe it's other facts is another place, but I don't think that's necessarily. I don't know if there's standards mandated. See,
against all the standards.
All the standards that are in existence, and see if there are pieces in other places, and how that comes together. Do we have, do we cover the water, or are there huge gaps that need to be
you know, put forward in wherever they make the most sense.
Mm-hmm. What I'll also try to do is bring in something on the what Wisconsin has done. Their Jumpstart president, David...
Mansell.
Mansell was also on the president's council on financial literacy, which has now been revised under Obama. But it's my understanding that the Jumpstart standards were at different levels, you know, fifth grade and high school. Those were integrated into various curricula.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's the group that feels on the road.
To your point, Kathy, I'm just wondering if it isn't worth a conversation if anyone has a contact with the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. I would just, the one concern I have is because it is such a big project and this is a two-year group and we're already quickly going through, you know, half a year, and we haven't even gotten to adults yet, so is, you know, who is best positioned to do that, and then how would that information be used? Because, you know, there's no reason to go down a big project if we didn't feel like it was going to be used in a meaningful way, and either in the context of this group, but also in the context of Department of Education.
Would it be workable to suggest that as the social studies standards are rewritten, that there be sort of like a report at the end saying, of the national standards, we covered the following and we missed the others? So that would get at Kathy's gaps. We would know that this part of the national standards were incorporated, mm-hmm. and the remaining parts were not. Mm-hmm. And we could then say, well, maybe some of them can go to math, or some of them can be done independently, or whatever. But mm-hmm. As part of the rewrite, could we know what they did? Mm-hmm. You know, could we make that suggestion that they tell us what was done, what was put in from the national, and what wasn't?
And maybe then the ones that weren't, we could ask someone at the Department of Ed, are these covered elsewhere? Because mm-hmm. they might know that very quickly, and maybe that is the back door into doing this.
But that seems a little post-mortem.
It is, but at least...
Yeah,
well...
You know, I'm thinking...
It would also force them to think about it as they're doing it.
Well, don't forget there's going to be a shifting over at the Department of Ed in, you know, near... weeks. Mm-hmm. So, people. You know, I mean, a lot of people will stay. I'm not saying the whole department's leaving, but, you know, there will be leadership changes, and who knows who's going to land where, so you probably need to see where the deck chairs land and then figure out who's the right person, and, you know, there may be... You know.
It seems to me, too, that Jennifer had to leave, but the people that do teacher prep are pretty in tune with what's required in schools, because they have to, in some ways, that drives the curriculum at the secondary level so that they teach to those mm-hmm. things, which is why personal finance is not mm-hmm. necessarily on our
right.
radars. So it might be that some of those folks could help us with that process, too, of looking. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer would be one. She's got a state leadership role, and there are others, I'm sure. I don't know all the teachers, teacher trainers, teacher educators.
It seems to me it would be an easy byproduct for them to just tell us which ones they put in and which ones they didn't, and that it would be useful to know that.
Yeah. So, in addition to kind of the homework that a few of you agreed to take on, I'd like to suggest, and Kathy, thanks for passing this on, I copied the new report from the Financial Literacy and Education Commission, and this really is beginning to lay out where this work is heading nationally through this group, which was convened by the Treasury Department. I think it's really critical that we all have some, you know, level of basic understanding of this piece of things, because it is one, it's kind of a new direction, and I think it's an opportunity for us to look at how we want to potentially align. And so I just want to touch on one point that I've encouraged. This isn't very long, because this isn't a whole plan yet. They're developing the whole plan in 2011. On page 3, the second half of the page just identifies 4 goals. And I think if you begin to look at developing a work plan, which I think we'll have to postpone until next time, apologize to not managing time better, but I kind of felt like this was where we needed to go, for better or worse. So if you don't agree with that, sorry, too late.
please do sign if you didn't get to sign in earlier. So I'm going to pass it down that area.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, so I think looking at those four goals, but also just reading the report, because it really does start to lay out much of, I think, some of what was really touched on today around, like, the need around core competencies, the need to tie education to key transitions, you know, all of that. And then take a look. I just really began as a starting point. It's no way meant to reflect anything comprehensive, but as a starting point, one way of framing a work plan. That does not need to be where we end up. It was just a place to kind of get the discussion moving, you know, quickly, but not to rush it. And so if you could all agree to look at this information prior to the next meeting, so that halfway, and I think we can commit that half, the first half will touch base on kind of what's been brought together around this, you know, the K-12, and then we'll dive into whether we finish that discussion or not. We'll dive into really fleshing out a work plan to help shape the direction of this group moving forward. Does that sound good to people? I'm seeing heads nod, so I'm assuming we're okay. So is there, you know, we've got the legislative session starting, but, you know, none of us currently in the room, I think, are legislators. So I'm wondering when it makes sense to meet again, maybe in December. Mm-hmm. So would it make sense to meet maybe... So is there not another task force meeting until after the session?
Well, there may be one in the beginning of January, depending on what legislative ideas are brought forward by each of the working groups.
What are people's thoughts about maybe meeting in mid-January?
Or sooner.
Okay. And does this time frame work for most people? I mean, we're talking to people who are in the room, so it's sort of a comical.
It never works for a teacher here at 2 o'clock, but yeah. You know, we can try to make arrangements. You know.
Would 2:30 be better?
3 would be better. Yeah. Much better.
I just worry about traffic.
Yeah, I understand. So. No, it can be done.
Okay. So, well, Trish and I will talk we want to make sure we connect with Representative Szymanski, obviously, and Kevin, and choose a date in mid-January and then get that information out to folks. So homework, read this, begin to look at the work plan, we'll discuss it in much greater detail, and then
provide data you also already know. You know, that's really essential.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all together the research. And
thank you so much.
Can I make one last comment? I've been talking too much, but I really appreciate that we're talking about standards, but I think the standards in and of themselves are not inherently poverty-focused. We do have to maybe think about some targeting things at some point.
Yeah, well, and I think the work plan will get us to that point.
Andrew, do you have extra copies of the work plan?
I'll put it up on the website too.
I printed it, but maybe.